The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we are going to answer a couple of emails that we received regarding retirement planning, and one even asks us specifically what we think about their ability to retire, something very specific, which really leads us to a conversation of what you might look for in a retirement plan. So if you're curious, what are the components you should really consider in a retirement plan, or what might set one retirement plan apart from another? We'll talk about those specifics today here on the Retirement and IRA Show. Thanks for joining us today. Good afternoon, Jim.
Good afternoon.
I think we should start with some good news. We have some really good news.
It's 3:20. It's
2:20.
Well, shouldn't we tell people we're pre-recording and get through all this?
I think they kind of know that now.
Okay. Well,
It is Tuesday, March something.
Well, I wanted to wish you happy Atlanta Falcons Day. It is 3:28.
3:20. Why is that Atlanta Falcons Day?
Because when the Patriots took the lead in the Super Bowl, the score was 28-3, 3:28.
They couldn't have taken the lead when it was 28-3.
Atlanta had 28, Patriots had 3.
So they were behind. They didn't
yes,
take
they were
the
behind.
Lead.
They did take the lead after that, 3:28. Don't ruin my happy Atlanta Falcons Day. When I came in today, Andrew said, happy Atlanta Falcons Day. I says, what the hell is that? He said 3:28, and then he showed me this little thing that's going around social media. I don't know. It was on his phone, and it said, happy Atlanta Falcons Day, 3-28. And then I knew. I says, that was the score. He says, yeah, that's the third quarter score in the Super Bowl when the Patriots turned everything around. So today at 3.
Oh, so it wasn't the score wasn't 3 points to 28 points. I thought that's what you meant.
Yeah, it was. It was 3 for the Patriots, 28 for the Atlanta Falcons.
You said in the third quarter.
That was the third quarter.
I realize that. But they're not ahead if they're behind.
You're ruining my
whole. They're behind by 25
You're ruining
points.
My whole Atlanta Falcons day.
So at 3:28, yes, it was a happy day for the Falcons.
No, today
later on that day.
Today is March 28th.
I know. This isn't. Justin shared with you a terrible.
That wasn't Justin. It was Andrew.
Okay. Well, I probably wouldn't put a lot of faith in Andrew.
Well, he asked if I was going
I get
to
it,
mention
but that's a very convoluted.
He said, are you going to mention it on the radio? I says, well, I can,
well,
but
now we have.
We're going to upset all our Atlanta listeners.
They haven't gotten over it yet?
I don't know. I have no idea if they're over it yet.
It's very disappointing for an Atlanta Falcons fan, for sure. And anyone who dislikes the Patriots, it was also very disappointing.
Who would dislike the Patriots?
Any number of people.
Why?
Because they prefer anyone but the Patriots to win? I don't know.
I can be like a 2-year-old. Why?
You could.
Just keep
at this time
why.
And many others. But that's not the good news I'm talking about. This,
no, it isn't. We have other good news.
We have other good news, and the good news involves reading a new disclaimer.
Woo-hoo!
Woo. So let me read this, and then I'll tell people will be wondering, why the heck is this good news? And then I'll share with people why this is good.
So you're
going to
read
news.
The new disclaimer that...
I am.
Okay, what Chris is going to read to you folks will play...
Don't give it away.
At the end, I'm not going to give it away, it will play at the end of all future versions of the Retirement and IRA Show.
Or maybe at the beginning.
No, that should play at the end when no one listens to it.
Okay. I get it. Okay.
Okay, well, read the new disclosure if you'd like.
Well, this is in addition to the disclaimer we have to make, the yes. disclosure slash disclaimer we make already. So this is exciting news. Here it is. It starts. Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of investment company products carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the investment company. Prospectuses may be obtained from your advisor and should be read in full. All guarantees are backed by the claims-paying ability of the issuing insurer. Withdrawals and death benefits are subject to income tax. If withdrawals and other distributions are received prior to age 59 and a half, a 10% penalty may apply. Shares, when redeemed, may be worth more or less than the original cost.
Now, I pause
there for a minute on the word prospectuses. Shouldn't that be prospecti? Like octopuses or octopi?
I usually call them prospectuses, but maybe prospecti.
This was typed by someone other than Jim, so it wasn't Jim who chose the word prospectuses.
No, that was created by FINRA, Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. And they're like God, or at least they think they're God. So that has to be correct.
Yeah. So
why are we doing this?
The good news.
The good news.
We can now finally, and freely.
Do we have a drum roll?
Would you stop interrupting?
All right, go ahead.
You're stealing my thunder.
I am stealing your thunder. Because when I told you today... You thought I was kidding you.
I did, because this has been...
A thorn in our side.
Some 18 years or however long we've been
doing
this.
Well, why don't we do it this way?
Yes.
I will say what we used to have to say, and then you say the real word.
Perfect.
Okay, so if you listen to this show for a while, you know that yours truly, and Chris, we speak our mind. And we generally throw the industry under the bus where the industry deserves to be thrown under the bus. And one of the parts of the industry that we would throw under the bus on a regular basis is an organization called FINRA. That stands for the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. Yours truly is regulated by FINRA because I, in addition to being a state-registered investment advisor, the state being the state of Colorado, registered investment advisor, and an investment advisor representative regulated by the SEC under a relationship I have with a company called Cambridge. In addition to that, and that makes me a fiduciary advisor, I also maintain what is called a registered rep status. That's the old stockbroker status. That's what people remember that by. Yep. And this is going, remember, folks, I've been doing this 17 years. And when I first came on, that was really one of the only ways to get into the industry.
Yep.
I have maintained that designation for 17 years, even though for the past 12 years, maybe 10 years, I can't remember at this point, I haven't done commission brokerage business. It's just not my business model. Mm-hmm. But I have maintained that designation, and mostly because of people that I have worked with from years and years ago, Chris, who still have brokerage-style accounts. There's no reason to replace them. They're perfectly fine. And I want to maintain a relationship with those people. So I have this designation. It just kind of sits there on the back shelf and every once in a while pokes us in the eye. That's really all it does. It really just grates on our nerve, and someday I'm going to give it up. But one of the things that bothered Chris and I, we would say, we want to teach you, the listener, different topics. And we would explain why a financial entertainer like Dave Ramsey or who's that woman? I always forget her name. Susie Orman and Clark Howard and all the other guys and gals out there who give financial advice or talk. They are not licensed financial planners, either a registered rep or a investment advisor representative or a registered investment advisor. They're none of that. They are an entertainer. entertainer. So we have often said how they can say things that Chris and I couldn't. Well, as luck would have it, it was recently brought to our attention that FINRA, otherwise known as the Evil Empire, has changed their opinion, and they want to make it easier, Chris, for registered reps, of which, again, I have maintained this designation, to actually educate the public. And they're starting to realize in order to do that, we have to be able to utter certain words.
Yeah.
Words that we used to joke on the show, very similar to George Carlin's seven dirty words that can never mm-hmm. be said on TV. These were FINRA dirty words that can never be said anywhere. They didn't want us uttering these words until they changed the rules.
Well, so, let me clarify that you could utter these words, but you had to then pay a stiff penalty to have FINRA review exactly what you said and approve it for replay. And that was the issue. And the fee, the penalty, and I call it a penalty because the cost for them to review it was so outrageous.
Well, it was $10. In order to get the radio show approved, we had to pay $10. Mm-hmm. And that was $10 a minute.
Right.
And our show is a two-hour show. Mm-hmm. Now, you break out all the commercials that play on KFKA because it's not a dedicated iTunes podcast. So what is it, like an hour and... Is it an hour? Or is it... It's more than an hour. It's like 100 minutes, not 120. It's a little over 100
longer
minutes.
Longer than that, probably. I think it's about 125, 128 minutes.
Well, it can't be.
Can't be 100. 115, I think, is what it is.
It's 115? Is that much?
Yeah, because there's not really that much breaks. There's not really that much for breaks.
On KFKA, really?
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, if Chris is right and it's 150 minutes, if I uttered these words... I would have to pay $1,500. You have to pay someone $10 a minute at FINRA to listen to my podcast / radio show just to make sure that as I uttered that word, I wasn't uttering anything else they don't want me to utter.
And not just to review the part where you talked about...
The whole show.
The offensive word.
Right.
You had to give them the whole show. So every week, even when we just over and over and over again, every single week, this would have to be paid, which isn't an enormous sum, but oh my gosh.
$1,500?
$1,500?
It's $10 a minute. Not $10 a show.
I realize that. No, I realize this.
How can you say it's not an outrageous amount? I'm not going to pay $1,500.
No, I know, but it's not like... to a billionaire, it's not a lot.
We're not billionaires.
No, I know. That's my point. Try to run this. And as you probably noticed, if you're a listener, we don't have a bunch of advertisements from other entities on here.
Even if we did, yeah. It's the principle. I'm not paying someone $1,500 because I uttered words. Well, FINRA has finally come around and smartened up and realized in order for registered reps to educate the public about certain topics that we should be knowledgeable on, we actually have to utter the words of those products. Mm-hmm. So in the past, we used to say, I'm going to give you what we used to say. I'm going to give the listeners in maybe 5 seconds, play the little do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Okay.
And let them guess if they can figure out what it is we used to be talking about, and then you will give the real word.
Perfect.
Okay. So in the past, I had to say... Diversified investment option. And do they have to
Alex,
say what is?
What is a mutual fund?
Yay. Where's that clapper? There you go.
You can't just blurt out for sound effects. Go ahead.
It worked. So in the past, we used to have to say diversified investment option. I can now actually say the word mutual fund. And not only that, finally, they're going to let us teach you about mutual funds, which was always a thorn in my side. I want to teach you what the different share classes are. I especially, Chris, remember we did a whole show, we wanted to do a whole show once on target date funds. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk about what a target date fund is because mm-hmm. they're all over the place in 401ks,
yep.
And I couldn't. And it was just really, the arguments I would have with our compliance department. She's a wonderful woman. She actually called me personally earlier in the week to tell me the good news. So I am going to stop planning a lot of good shows to teach people a lot about mutual funds. But every once in a while, the word mutual fund would come out in passing. But we could never really dedicate a show to just mutual funds. And not only that, talk about the different types. What FINRA will not let me do, and it's no problem because we're not a stock jock show, they won't let me say, I like this particular mutual fund or this particular mutual fund family. I can't do that. But I can talk about funds in general, teach people the difference between a passive investment fund, an active mutual fund, teach people what an allocation mutual fund is. We can finally do all this.
And talk about the different fee structures
of the mutual funds,
which is very important to understand.
Exactly. So, I mean, I feel like you said, a butterfly coming out of the cocoon.
This is a happy day. Lots of things. And then... that's probably the biggest one. What's the other thing that we...
There is another one. Mm-hmm. I used to say... Okay, you ready? So that was the first one. Here we go. Play again. Mm-hmm. So in the past, we used to say this. The annuity whose return varies with that of the market. That's a long one. So the annuity whose return varies with that of the market.
Alex, what is a variable annuity?
That was the other one that was a thorn in my side. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be able to teach people the difference between a fixed annuity and a variable annuity. If you remember, when we talk about annuities, I always had to say, we're talking fixed annuities now, folks, income style annuity. You know, I'd have to keep saying that. Mm-hmm. God forbid FINRA ever think I was talking about a variable annuity. So now they have lifted that word as well and actually want us to imagine that, Chris. Regulators who actually want us to teach about these now rather than keep us from ever saying it. I could never understand why FINRA regulates a broker's ability to sell these products. So I just wanted to sit a FINRA guy down someday and say, let me get this straight. You want me to sell this, but I can't talk about it.
Publicly. It has to be privately, hush-hush, behind closed doors.
Behind closed doors, not being recorded, in private. I didn't talk about it till the cows come home. Mm-hmm. And then hand them all these disclosures. I had to hand out a bunch of disclosures. But
no one ever reads fully. Or even if they do, probably don't understand
Do you think people even understand what it is you just said?
No, but hopefully they're going to understand all the other stuff we get to talk about. Okay. Surrounding that topic.
So to us, Chris and I were very, very happy. It was a new day. It's a happy day.
It is. Yeah, we're going to be partying for a long time over this. This is a very big deal. So sorry to make such a big deal about it to everyone else, but for us, this is pretty liberating. So I'm going to blurt out just randomly the word mutual fund occasionally during the show.
Like you have Tourette's syndrome?
Yeah, something. Hopefully maybe an email we have today deals something with a mutual fund. If not, let's just find a way to insert it as many times as possible.
Or a variable annuity. Mm-hmm. You know, we were going to, I kept saying I was going to give up my FINRA registration. I'm going to give it up. And one of these days I will. For a variety of reasons I haven't, most important of all, is I still want to service some of these accounts for these legacy clients of mine, and I want to be associated there. And if I give that up, I can no longer service those accounts.
Right. Essentially, what they have to do is those accounts have to be handed over to another broker to manage those accounts or to interact with those accounts for the client. And obviously, that client could still talk to us and Jim, but wouldn't be able to do things, affect their accounts and do transactions and that sort of thing, which those people might want. So that's the obvious reason why he might continue with this thorn in his side.
We had often joked about someday giving it up, and the whole show just keeps saying mutual fund, mutual fund, mutual fund, mutual fund.
Well, that show is today.
Because if you are a registered investment, this is, I don't expect listeners to understand this, but I'm trying to teach them slowly, Chris. We talk about the difference between a registered rep or advisor with an OR and a investment advisor representative, or the word advisor with an ER. And we try to teach people the difference between the two and how one is regulated by either the state or the SEC, or in my case, both. And the broker is regulated by FINRA. And brokers in the industry are called registered reps, which stands for registered representative. But everybody knows them as stockbrokers. They stopped calling themselves brokers, well over a decade ago. And they went into financial consultant and then financial planner. And now I think they're wealth manager is another thing they go by. But and then, of course, we have the investment advisor with an ER, which is regulated by the Investment Advisors Act of 1940. Everybody wonders again, how do they come up with ER and OR? The Investment Advisors Act of 1940 spells advisor with an ER. So the brokerage industry just started using the OR to kind of separate the two so people could see the ER is regulated under the Investment Advisor Act of 1940. They have to act as a fiduciary, and they are known as an investment advisor representative. And that's that part. It's called the advisory world. And then you have the OR advisor or the broker advisor who's a registered rep regulated by FINRA. I'm known as what is a hybrid. Because I'm both. Mm-hmm. I'm a broker and I'm a registered representative. Now, my business model, we haven't done brokerage products. I don't sell private placements. I don't sell illiquid investments. I don't sell commission funds. But I have maintained that, as you said, to handle legacy clients. Our business model, my business model for a long time has been fees. I've always just wanted to charge clients for my time. I know it's a radical concept in the industry. Colleagues used to think I was crazy back in the heyday of commissions. Like, you're crazy just charging a fee. You could be getting 10 times that in a commission. But I always hated it because when you're a commission salesman, Chris, every year you're out there selling. You have to. You don't have a relationship. I won't mention the firm I started with 17 years ago. I started with a national firm that shall remain nameless. And the top advisor in the office way back then, it obviously wasn't me, I was just getting into it, had 750 clients. And he held that as a badge that he had so many clients. And I used to think, how the hell do you service 750 clients? It's one guy. And it wasn't that he had 750 active clients. He had 750 people that he sold things to. He has to keep selling things. Every year he has to go and get more and more and more to keep selling and generating a commission. Whereas I've always liked the advisor model where people will pay you. If they like you, they're going to keep paying you for your advice and for your help. If they don't like you, they stop paying you and off they go. And I just always thought that was a fairer approach. So that's how I became all these hybrids and this and that and the other thing. But sometimes people can't believe we couldn't say the word mutual fund or variable annuity.
Without paying the hefty price.
Yeah, it's not that we couldn't, as Chris said. Yeah. And we could years ago on the show. We didn't have that problem years ago on the show, Chris, because we were never on iTunes. When we started podcasting is when the problem arose. Because when we used to do this show solely live every week out of Northern Colorado, the regulators consider that a public appearance.
Right.
And in a public appearance, I'm allowed to say mutual fund and variable annuity. In other words, if somebody's at a public appearance and asks me a question, I can't say to them, well, you really need to get a diversified investment option. I got to be able to say the word mutual fund. Mm-hmm. It's when we started making it available on iTunes on demand, the regulator said that is an advertisement. And if you say the word mutual fund or variable annuity in an advertisement, we need to hear it to make sure you're not saying anything else wrong about those products.
Because they assume that you're trying to sell one of those items.
And not teach.
Correct.
Now this new rule allows us to teach. If we're going to sell, it's got to go back the old way. But if we just teach, they dawned on them there's a difference between selling and teaching. So God bless them, thankfully, and we look forward to some really good shows coming up now where I can teach you things about variable annuities and mutual funds that you have never known.
Perfect. So when we come back from this short break, we're going to hear one of the top songs from 1935, which is the year that Social Security started, and Mutual Fund, Mutual Fund, Mutual Fund. We'll be back right back with you in just a second.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Heaven, I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That, of course, is Fred Astaire. That is a song, Cheek to Cheek, written by Irving Berlin. For Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. It was in the comedy Top Hat, one of my favorites from that era. Considered to have some of the top, finest dance work for Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. Fun fact, it cost $620,000 total to make and grossed $3 million. With its initial release, which at the time was considered, that's a lot of money back in 1935. So, very, very successful film. Turned out to be the top song, number one overall hit in 1935. So, we actually are hearing the number one, not just a hit, but the number one hit from 1935, the year that Social Security started. So, once Jim turns on his microphone, he'll join us. Just reminding him.
It was on.
It wasn't.
It was too. I swear on my grandmother's soul.
Okay. Normally when you're off reading your emails at the break, you don't turn it back on. So I was watching out for you. So mutual fund. By the time we got through that whole conversation, we ate up the full first segment. So why don't we get into our first email here? The question about retirement planning. I think, Jim, you said we had two of these, or are we going to cover something else first?
We have two emails that I intend to, at first blush, you would think they're not related, but I can kill two birds with one stone with this show today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we got the first email in March 14th, so not too long ago. For us, that's pretty good, just a couple weeks into answering it. And then the other one came in on March 8th, so that's a little more typical.
We're still pretty caught up.
Yeah, that's
we're
for us.
We're just in the same month, because this is March 28th when
we're
recording
this week
this.
Alone, we got four new ones in.
Oh.
So we're getting, they're here. You can see one I actually had to put notes down on and even highlight certain things.
But that's for next week?
Next week or the week after, whenever I get around to it.
Okay.
I try to answer them in chronological order.
Very nice.
But
unless you're from Texas, and then we put it off for 6 months.
Then we put it off. Oh, speaking of him, that's Lone Star George.
Mm-hmm.
Slow down. I can say things. a quick shout out. He sent us an email. He thanked us for answering his question finally, six, 8 months into, into it, and said that he felt...
For listeners who didn't hear it, it was kind of a lengthy, detailed email that we answered in
tax
two pieces.
Window.
We talked about the estate planning questions he had, and then as well about some assets with possible
Roth conversions,
things like that.
And we explained to him what I call the tax hole, you call the tax planning window, and Justin calls the tax
window.
Void.
I call it the golden window.
The golden window. But anyways.
You can keep more gold if you go use the window.
I like the window analogy. I'm not too keen on the gold.
Really?
But I like tax planning window I think that's what we as a firm have decided, or Justin and I.
Golden just seems glorious and happy and beneficial.
Whatever. But he reached back out to us and thanked us and then kind of called me out on a dare.
What?
He called me out on a dare, so I am going to call Lone Star George out on a dare back. Mm-hmm. If listeners know, you got some stupid little fish recording. Every time I muff up a word, Chris plays it. It's from Leaning Nemo or Captain...
No, Finding, not Leaning.
Finding Nemo, Finding whatever. Nemo. Finding Nemo. Apparently, it's a kid's cartoon. Mm-hmm. And the little fish, I guess his name is Nemo, he can't talk too well.
Which he's a tiny kid.
I can relate.
You're not a tiny kid.
Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And... the fish muffs up his M&Ms.
Yes, he does.
So,
like others we know.
So Lone Star thought it would be funny, and he sent Chris the recording. And Chris just waits patiently for me to muff up a word, and then he likes to play the fish's
recording.
But now
sounds like a good time here.
All new explorers must answer a science question.
Okay.
You live in what kind of home?
In an anemone.
Okay, don't hurt yourself. Welcome aboard, explorer.
So Lone Star... sent me.
He turned me on to that clip, which is a permanent part of the show now.
I know. Yes. So anyways, he sent me, shortly after sending you that email, he sent me an apology email. Mm-hmm. And I read the email and I wrote back to him. I says, don't worry, Lone Star. It's fine. I'm not upset and I'm okay with it. And I kind of forgot about it. Mm-hmm. Well, when he sent the recent email to us to thank us, he kind of called me out. He said, my aim with sending the apology email was to try to trick you
into
read it mm-hmm. on the radio. Because I didn't really pay much attention to it. He has peppered his email with voice bombs, word bombs.
Gym bombs.
Gym, specifically to get me to make a fool of myself trying mm-hmm. to read it.
Yeah.
So,
which we all know makes for great radio.
I started mm-hmm. reading through this and mm-hmm. I thought to myself, I can do this. Mm-hmm. I can read this email and not muff up. Mm-hmm. So I am calling you out, Lone Star.
Can I see it?
You can see it. It's right there. You haven't seen it yet. I'm calling you out. I am going to bet you. You gotta. I know you're an evil one percenter, so you can probably afford this bet. $100. If I can read that email peppered with landmines that Chris is already laughing over, peppered with landmines. You don't think I can do it, do you?
The email is great, and I don't think you can do it.
Look, you're dying over there.
I don't
there.
Think you can do it.
Would you like to bet me $100 too?
No, because if I know you, if there's $100 on the line, you're going to go home and practice it in front of the mirror.
I've already practiced a couple of the
words
with Justin.
Although, I've worked with you on some of these words, and... it still doesn't work.
I don't think you can do it. I have two doubting Thomases, mm-hmm. but Lone Star, because mm-hmm. I want to move on with the show today.
Perfect.
Lone Star, I am calling you out. $100 bet, but here's the bet, not for cash. If I can read your email on the radio without muffing up a word, you donate $100 to a charity of my choice. And I'm probably going to choose the Larimer County in Colorado, Larimer County Humane Society. If I muff a word up, I will donate, or my firm will donate, $100 to a charity of his choice. Sound fair?
Sounds eminently fair.
Well, we have to wait for Lone Star to accept or decline our bet.
Well, plus that buys you some time to practice. So I get it.
So we will see, and then we'll have to try to read it at the end of the show. But so there are like three or four words in here.
There's plenty. And you might make it about halfway.
You think I'll get that far?
I think you'll get about halfway. But then it'll just...
The first sentence was easy. I was like, that's easy. Yeah, then he gets into some of the words. But he missed the most important word of all. The one that I will never say anymore. The one that means privacy.
Oh, I think...
No, that's not in here.
Not exactly that word, but all of its relatives are in there.
But not that word. Mm-hmm. I probably
didn't make any reference to the abominable snowman.
No, that...
Which would have definitely...
I've mastered that.
Really? Would you like to try right now?
A bomb in a bull snowman. I just have to slow down.
It, can you make it sound not like a commercial on phonetics?
No, I'm going to have to read this phonetically as well.
You can read it phonetically too. He's a reading fanatic.
Anyways, let's move on to our email question. But Lone Star, my offer stands out there. You have to take us up on this bet. And Chris apparently is on your side too. He doesn't think I'm not going to be able to do this, but he does not want to bet $100.
No, but I have adopted an animal from the Humane Society before, so maybe that's my contribution.
Well, it will go there. I donate to the Humane Society, so okay. That's where I would want my $100
to go. Our two cats came from the Humane Society.
Okay. All right, so what we got is an email on March 14th that was very, very detailed. It was from a woman. She gave her real name at the beginning, but she did sign it Georgette and George, and it's a husband and wife. The husband is 52. She is 47. I will have to say I'm not going to read this email because most of the email is very, very detailed. It's probably one of the most detailed emails. You see it here. It's two pages. Mm-hmm. Most detailed email we have probably received as far as her assets, what she has, real estate holdings. They have 9 rental properties, income, assets, expense information, goals, dreams, ideas, thoughts, strategies. It's all in here. But in short, Chris, her main point, she wants me to tell her if she can retire or not. And we can't do that. I apologize. This is probably the first question, the first email that I can't answer directly. Number one, even though your email listener is very, very detailed, and she doesn't tell us where she's from. I should read. She's probably not going to like my answer I'm giving her.
It would be nice if she were from Maine, be nice, New Hampshire, right. Rhode Island, or Delaware.
Yeah. If she is from one of those states, Chris is trying to put a star in a state from everyone who emails us. But what I want to do is I do want to answer her question, but I want to explain why I can't answer it. I can't answer it because even though this is a detailed email, it's not nearly detailed enough to tell her
to
if she can retire.
Question, right.
That's the thing. She may think she gave me a lot of information, and as far as an email goes, it is. But it's nothing compared to what we would have to collect. Mm-hmm. They want to retire in 6 years. Mm-hmm. He's 52. She's 47. So we're talking an early retirement that may have to last 40 to 50 years. Maybe 50 years is pushing it, but definitely it could last 40 years if one of them have longevity. Mm-hmm. And in order for me to make these projections, the information she gave me is woefully inadequate. Mm-hmm. But she also has to understand we are not financial entertainers, listener. As I said in the previous segment, we are actual financial planners. We can't just tell you, oh, yeah, based on everything she
sounds
wrote.
Good. Oh, sounds
yeah,
bad.
She's on track. Go for it. That exposes me to a tremendous amount of liability.
Well, we wouldn't. Anybody who would claim to do that, looking at that and making a judgment call, is woefully underestimating the types of things that need to be considered to answer such a question.
Absolutely. What you need, listener, for your question is a retirement plan. You don't need a financial plan. You need a retirement plan. And today's show, I'm going to teach people, in my opinion, some of the things they should look for when considering a retirement plan. Mm-hmm. And some of the types, some of the forms, some of the basis of what a retirement plan is. And I'm looking for the second email that kind of ties into this one. Oh, here it is. Okay, and this one came from March 8th. In order for me to answer the first listener's question, the 47 and 52-year-old husband and wife who named themselves George and Georgette, I can't answer it because there's no way near enough information in this email for Chris and I to put into our projection software, build into our model. We have a very disciplined process, financial planning process and model. There's not nearly enough information in here for us to do that. Not only that, we cannot give this level of specificity without a financial planning agreement in place and without me getting a lot more information. So I'm going to teach her some of the things she needs to know as she evaluates people to hire to help her come up. And her case is so advanced. There's no online 20-question calculator this person can do. This couple needs a good planner and a good plan.
Some people have fairly straightforward financial situations. So some of these do-it-yourself or free analysis tools can do a pretty good job of giving you an idea of what you can expect and what you need to have saved and those sorts of things to give you some guidance there. It doesn't take too much, though, to start getting to a level of a technical difficulty level, if you will, that requires someone with knowledge of all the facets of retirement planning and how all this stuff fits together to do a good quality job in putting together a retirement plan. Some think of it as a map or a navigation system so that you can move forward for, and as you indicated, if they're going to retire in their late 50s, early 50s, which is what you're indicating there, they have a lot of years that they're going to have to navigate through the retirement system. Some pre-Medicare, for instance, they've got a lot of years before they're going to reach Medicare age. What are you going to do about health care during that time? Might be the same as what you're doing now, might be very different. Then they've got a whole phase after they reach Medicare age and as they're approaching required minimum distribution age. Then they've got all these questions about what they're going to do with their rental fleet, if you will, all the rental properties that they might have, if they're going to manage those themselves or someone else. It just goes on and on and on and on. So some people, you know, work a basic job, have no complicated investments, maybe have a very straightforward set of assets saved and have a very, you know, uncomplicated, fairly predictable set of expenses that they live on and wouldn't take a real complicated retirement plan. These folks, though, and the reason why I'm sure they're reaching out is because they've realized it is somewhat complicated. There's a lot of moving parts and they need some help.
Absolutely. The second email came in the week before or 2 weeks before this email, and it was in response to a show we had done at that time. And he wrote, and so this one I can mention, oh, he's from Georgia. Do we have Georgia?
Yes.
We have Georgia. Okay.
We have a nice blue star on Georgia.
Well, at least we have someone who listed where they're from. Okay, so it begins, "Hi, Jim. Listened to your latest podcast, and I must admit it was the most interesting since I have been listening to you for eons."
Feels like we've been doing this for eons.
"Having said that, you and Chris alluded to the term minimum dignity floor. Mm-hmm. I am under the impression this means the ability to pay for everyday bills such as utilities, food, transportation, and housing. Is my thinking on the right track? I found this specific subject especially interesting since it applies to my situation in a couple of years. Thank you very much." And he put his real name, but of course we are going to call him George. So I'm guessing he's getting ready to retire and he's listening to our show. And he was asking about the minimum dignity floor. That is a term I created. It's not a
all Jim's. I didn't come up with that one.
It's not a financial planning term that the industry adopts or recognizes. It's a term that I came up with because of our approach, Chris and I's philosophy and process to retirement planning. So the reason I lumped these two emails together is I am going to teach our listeners elements to consider when evaluating who to hire to help them with a retirement plan. Not necessarily how to hire the advisor. Let's just assume you found the advisors. Now you have to evaluate their approach to retirement planning. Because there's no one approach. There's multiple approaches to how you're going to do your retirement planning. That's what we're going to talk about. Not the advisors. We talk all the time how to evaluate advisors, and we're going to continue to do that. Let's talk, Chris, about the plans. And interspaced with this discussion, we'll be teaching people about our process. And by default, we're going to get on the subject of minimum dignity floor today.
Right. And there's one even beyond when he says there's multiple approaches to retirement planning. There's multiple successful approaches to retirement planning. There's some that are fraught with issues, I wouldn't call them, I wouldn't label them successful, but there's any number of approaches that might be successful. So our process isn't the one and only. We like our process, and we'll talk about the reasons why we like our process as we move forward. But I'm not going to be so judgmental as to say ours is the process, ours is the one and only process that will work and things like that. That's, I admit that's not true.
Right.
That's not true. It has some aspects that people seem to like, and I like it. You like it, right? You like it. Justin likes it.
Absolutely. Our clients like it.
All of our clients seem to like it. Other people may not buy into it. Maybe they prefer something
and
else.
And I tell that openly when people come and chat with us. If you don't resonate with our process, if you don't feel our process matches your thoughts and beliefs on retirement planning, don't hire us. We're not, and I don't want you working with us. You have to believe in our process. And that's what I want to teach y'all today. Not how to hire the advisor. Let's just say you found someone you like.
And trust.
And trust. Now, you've got to find out about his or her retirement planning approach. So what are some of the things you need to look for? What are some of the things you need to determine? To me, first and foremost, you need to find out what type of planner your planner is. And in the industry, and we can relate it, Chris, to the medical industry, you can have a generalist and a specialist. And we've all heard of that, that the generalist is I guess, like my doctor. He kind of knows a little bit about everything, but if there's ever anything bad on me or with me, he'll send me to a specialist to get it looked at a little bit closer. He may be able to pick up, hey, this isn't right. Now we got to go to this specialist. So in the financial planning world, you have really two different types of plans. The first plan, and I hate this term. This is an industry term that has just kind of been adopted. I don't like it. It's called a comprehensive financial plan. I don't like the word comprehensive. It gives the illusion they're covering everything.
A true comprehensive plan would be enormous, complicated, and very, very expensive, to be honest with you. Because for it to be truly comprehensive, it has to touch on all areas of the financial planning process, some of which may be of great importance to you, others not of great importance to you. But certainly if someone's going to claim to deliver you a comprehensive financial plan, they have to touch on everything and might be more than what you're looking for. People with very complicated situations might need exactly that. And it would be hard for a single person to deliver a comprehensive financial plan because it's going to require expertise in so many different areas.
Exactly. So instead of using the word comprehensive financial plan, which I don't like, but that's the industry. So again, the first thing I want our listeners, including this couple, we don't know where you're from, but the George and Georgette, the 52 and 47-year-old. One of the things you need to do as you evaluate working with someone, again, we're assuming you found the advisor, now find out what type of planning they do. So if they say, we do comprehensive financial planning, think generalist. And I, instead of saying the word comprehensive, I think it should be cursory. Is that the right word, cursory?
Cursory.
Cursory. I was right the first time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
But no great detail on any one topic. Just a little bit of this, a little bit of that. So they'll do, and they'll look at your overall financial picture. They'll look at your debt. They'll look at your insurance. They'll look at your retirement. They'll look at college planning. They look at all different areas. They'll do a little bit of, they'll say, estate planning and all these other tax planning. They'll do a little bit of everything. Never really deep, just looking a little at everything. So to me, comprehensive is the wrong word. I think the industry uses that more as a marketing ploy than anything. I have to throw the industry under the bus there. So I, again, and if someone out there is a practicing advisor and you do these comprehensive, or as I say, cursory, There's nothing wrong with that. I think a lot of young couples, a lot of younger people need that. They need a review of everything. There's nothing wrong with it. But when you get into a retirement plan, that's what the industry calls a modular plan. They're going to break down and look at one area of this comprehensive plan, Chris. So like a module, it's broken off. And to me, the modular plan, that can be the really deep plan. So we're going to pick up there in the next segment.
Okay, perfect. So the music means that we are at our next break. When we come back from this break, we're going to hear the number one hit from this week in 1977 as we look back 40 years. This number one hit about a spoiled rich kid became the first of six, count them, six number one hits for this popular duo. So we'll find out what song that is when we come back from this short break on the Retirement and IRA Show, Mutual Fund.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
You're a rich girl and you're gone too far, 'cause you know it don't matter anyway. You can rely on the old man's money. You can rely on the old man's money. It's a bitch, girl, but it's gone too far, 'cause you know it don't matter anyway. Say money, money won't get you too far, get you too far.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That was the number one song this week 40 years ago, back in 1977. And that, of course, is Hall & Oates, Daryl Hall and John Oates, to be specific. With Rich Girl, remains at the number one spot for the second week in a row. Apparently, Tina likes this song because she's allowing us to play it multiple times. Is she a big Hall & Oates fan, do you know?
I don't know, but I like the song, so I'm fine with that.
Yeah, so we're fine. So we learned last week that this song was originally actually about a guy.
Which surprised
rich
me.
Rich boy. Yeah. I don't know what the words were, but it was about a rich guy that they knew. Let's see what other fun facts we have. They're the best-selling duo of all time with 16 top 10 singles and 6 number one hits. Hall & Oates met when they were performing with different bands at a local radio station event. Somewhere along the line, a fight broke out at the radio station and everyone scattered. Daryl and John escaped via a service elevator, which is where they first met. That's a strange story.
Interesting.
I suppose they sang in the elevator on the way down just to test it out. Let's see how we sound together. I don't know. I wonder if they have a song about an elevator. That would be, I'll have to go back and look.
I don't know.
Anyway, this is the Retirement and IRA Show. We're talking a little bit about, actually quite a lot, about the retirement planning process. As distinguished from the financial planning process, we're talking about retirement planning in particular. Jim was referring to the fact that there are such things as comprehensive financial plans, which touch on all aspects. By their very name, you'd think they touch on all aspects of a person's financial situation. But generally, those plans are a little taste of everything, so not real deep. And it's where, when you get into taking the steps to accomplish something, it's the devil's in the details, is what I say. Sometimes the surface gives you a general idea, but then the question is, okay, how do I actually make that happen? How do I actually take the steps to get to this point over here that I'm headed? It's one thing to say, oh, it's over there somewhere. You know, you need to go over there. You know, well, how do I get there from here? That's where the detail comes in, and the depth, really, that Jim is referring to, and as we come back from the break here.
Right, and where we left off was talking about helping you, the listeners, specifically the email listener, but all listeners to this show. If you're listening to this show off of iTunes, you're probably a do-it-yourselfer. If you're listening to this show in Northern Colorado on KFKA, you could be a do-it-yourselfer, but you also may just be looking for, you know, something to listen to on a Saturday morning as you're driving around.
And maybe their radio is broken and can't change the channel.
You think so, they would want to.
It could happen.
But I will say most people who listen to this off of iTunes, if not all, are do-it-yourselfers. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, a do-it-yourselfer needs some help. They begin to realize, they, more than anyone, should realize, because they have at least a little more understanding of financial topics than most people, they begin to understand, like these listeners, they're probably biting off a little bit more than they can chew, and they need a little bit more depth and professionalism. So we've already assumed you've done your research and you've figured out some planners you like. Now, it's not just a matter of interviewing the planners. Find out their approach to your planning problem. If someone came into our office, Chris, and I have told people this before, I remember someone who came in most recently was really interested more in someone who was going to help him pick individual stocks. And as he put it, he wants someone who is going to be able to pick the winners. And I was like, gee, don't we all? And I told him, I said, that's not what we do here. It's just, you know, thank you very much. Enjoy the cup of coffee. But I'm a retirement planner. And it's different. But what people need to find out from their advisor that they're interviewing is, what is their approach to planning, and does their approach match their beliefs and their needs? That's very important. So if a young couple came into us and said, we need help getting out of debt, we would like you to help us evaluate our insurance needs, we'd like you to help us do some college planning, we'd like you to look at retirement abilities.
Mm-hmm. Estate planning issues.
If somebody wanted a little bit of everything... Whoops.
What?
Somebody, well,
you're just getting on a roll here.
I was on a roll here.
Suddenly, we've been
interrupted. We have a birthday cake just came in. You going to say anything?
We're going to sing for.
You're not going to sing on the radio, are you?
We are going to sing.
All right, sing, people.
Jim has to sing also.
For those who don't know, today is April 1st.
No, it's not. It's March 28th.
But by time this plays live, April 1st is Chris's 50th birthday. And everybody brought in a cake, so happy birthday
to you.
You stopped singing.
Yeah, I know.
They can only hear you, though, because you're the only one with a microphone.
Happy birthday, dear Chris.
Wow. This is very impressive. Plus, there's a lot of flames on there.
All right, blow that out before we start a fire.
Before it gets coated in wax. Wow, for a 50-year-old, I've got a lot of wind there, don't I?
And you have... You
wow,
have
that's
copious.
A lot of, that's a lot of cake. He's got there's a full cake, plus a whole plate full of cupcakes.
Well, wow. We figured you could take them home to your brood of six kids.
I could. I can.
So that's what they're all for.
And I should, and I will.
And a
wow.
card. So you
very
can put
nice.
That down. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
That was Andrew and Justin, folks. Give them a round of applause.
Yeah, very nice. That's here. I've got some applause sounds somewhere. We'll see if it actually works. Oh, here we go. Yeah, it was very nice.
But for those who don't know, April 1st, which is the day this radio show airs, is Chris's birthday. Mm-hmm. Our iTunian listeners, if you'd like to send Chris a birthday wish, you can email him at chris@jimhelps. That's Jim, HELPS.com. chris@jimhelps.com. It is his 50th birthday, so congratulations. Mm-hmm. And
thanks.
Then please bring home all this cake, because if you leave it here, we're going to eat it, and then that's not good.
My kids will enjoy it, I'm sure.
I mean, there's a lot of cake
there's
here.
There's a lot of cake. Yeah. Yeah.
And then she came in with the cupcakes. I was like, holy moly.
Wow, yeah.
And
maybe
she
those
said,
are for the office, and I can take that. Or
it
something.
Was if, no, I want a corner of the cake. Please. I don't want a cupcake. I want cake.
What do you? A cake and a cupcake's the same thing. This is just portable, handheld
no,
piece.
No, the frosting on the cupcake's much better. I mean, the frosting on the cake is much better. I just want a little corner.
That's fine. I'll mutate it. I'll disfigure it before I take
it's
it home.
For those who don't know, folks, it is a single layer round. And it's not round. It's like more oblong shape.
It's not round at all. It's rectangle.
Rectangle, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to our email question. What I'm trying to get people to understand is, as you interview someone, If you need a retirement plan, I don't quite think a comprehensive plan is the one you need. Even though it's going to have a little bit on retirement planning in there, it's not truly, in my opinion, the comprehensive plan. The industry calls when you highlight just one area of a comprehensive plan and isolate it and delve deep into that, they call that a modular plan. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at one area of the comprehensive financial planning process. I think the industry adopted the comprehensive plan based on the CFP program, where they cover a lot of different areas of financial planning. Mm-hmm. And they teach us, you know, to do one huge plan with a little coverage in each area. And I know what they're saying. They would be in, they say, look, Jim, we're looking for trends. We're looking to see if there's any red flags. Then we'll dive deeper in. That's mm-hmm. fine. But when someone is contemplating retirement, I personally think you need an advisor who doesn't do comprehensive plans. They do more in-depth plan. And the industry vernacular is modular plan, but it may go by something else. Mm-hmm. We do in our office just a retirement plan. So we take retirement and we drill down into it. We get real deep in there. But we don't talk at all about college planning in our retirement plan. We don't cover that at all. Now, obviously, we look at some tax aspects, but we look at the aspects in retirement. What are your RMDs going to be? How is that going to tax your Social Security? Should you be converting an IRA to a Roth IRA? These are the tax issues we're looking at. We don't look at some of the other issues that a more broad-based plan would look at, or a college plan. There's advisors who just do college plans, and they'll delve deep into that. We just do retirement planning. So obviously, we have a very specialized business model and a specialized clientele. We don't need everyone as a client. So it's important as you interview your financial planners, folks, you find out, especially if you're interested in just retirement planning, is your advisor giving a more broad-based plan or a more specific plan? Okay, so that's the first thing to look at. Then you have to ask them, what type of plan are you going to produce for me? And there's two main plans, Chris. Cash flow based and goals based.
Right.
So remember that, folks, and ask your advisor, what type of planning do you do? There's really only two types, cash flow based and goals based. Now, there are differences between the two. There is no right or wrong answer.
It's a philosophical difference, definitely.
And we vehemently believe in a cash flow based plan.
And I think that's because of a general foundational belief we have that everybody's situation is very individual. I think where things go wrong with, and you can get a high quality goals based plan where in a typical goal would be, I need 80% of my current income to live in retirement. So they're not breaking out any detail about exactly what you're going to spend money on and exactly where the income is going to come from. It's just, I need 80% or I need 75% or I need 110% or whatever the number is. And that's the goal. I need to reach that goal to be successful. They're dealing, in my opinion, and I think you share this opinion, that's too much dealing with averages. The average person needs X. The average person needs Y. You know, we just, if we can cover 80% of your income, even though what you're spending money on can be very different in retirement than it is now, we're going to say 80% should do it, right? And what gets missed is anything that's really unique about someone's individual situation. That's where a cash flow based plan will reveal those things. And it's those unique things about you and your specific situation that needs to get the most attention, because it's the stuff that's regular, that's like everyone else. There's not a lot of thought that has to go into that. There's plenty of understanding of how to cover those basic things. It's the one-offs. It's the unique aspects, your unique health situation, your unique situation of where you live and what you're exposed to, your unique family situation. There's just all these unique things that a goals-based plan usually will kind of gloss over and not really address, where a cash flow approach, while much more time-consuming, when people, especially other advisors, look at how much time we spend on a retirement plan, some people, they're shocked at the amount of time and a lot more effort, and a lot of times that means more costly. There's folks out there that'll advertise a goals-based plan. Yeah, we'll do it for you in half an hour for free, or we'll do, you know, it's included in XYZ. You do such and such a thing. And that's just waving your arms at retirement planning. That's just saying, yeah, here, I'm kind of doing retirement planning here, and I plug some things in, and it spits out, here's your goal. You know, that is doing a great disservice to people that vary from the mean, you know, or the median. If you are that middle person in America, where you're just the average of everything, may not be real sophisticated, but I've yet to meet that person. Of all the plans we've ever put together, every one of them has something unique about it.
Yeah. Goals, and again, it is definitely philosophical differences, but Chris and I like cash flow-based plan because it plays into our philosophy, which is the next thing we're going to talk about. But we prefer cash flow-based plans. Cash flow-based plans look at what your spending is now, projects what your spending will be in the future. A good cash flow program like the one we use allows full flexibility in scheduling expenses. We can reduce them. We can decrease them as you age, and we regularly do that. We decrease the amount you spend on groceries. We decrease the amount you spend on gasoline and other items as you get into your 80s and 90s and beyond. We just eat less. So our cash flow based plan allows for that. Different expenses can get different rates of inflation, different tax rates assigned to them, different tax treatments. Goals based plans, there are some good goals based financial planning programs out there. They, at the most simplistic level, they're the way Chris described. Your goal is you're going to live on 80, 70, 60, 50, 110%, whatever you choose, of your pre-retirement income. Then some can get a little fancier, I guess, Chris, let you set different percentages at different ages. So you might retire and initially want 110 during the go-go years, and then it can say 10 years into retirement or 12 years into retirement, we're going to reduce that down to 90%, and then 10 years later, we're going to reduce it down to 70%. So they can adjust and make different goals. So there is some flexibility there. I think it again boils down to their philosophy. But if you want to, in my opinion, a much more detailed orientated plan is going to be a cash flow based plan. It allows you to drill a little bit deeper. Now, that's my opinion. Anybody in the industry who's listening, you don't have to write to me and say, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. I use goals-based plans. I love them. We're not bashing it. We're just telling you there's two different types of plans, cash flow and goals-based. I think the important thing that I'm leading to, Chris, is the next question. Why? I want you to ask your advisor, do you do a goals-based plan or a cash flow-based plan for my retirement analysis? Let them tell you, and then ask them why. That's the crucial answer question, Chris. Not what are you using. To us, there's no right or wrong. Why? That's what you got to find out.
And that's kind of what I explained a moment ago, the why we like cash flow-based plan. Some might have great reasons why they use a goals-based plan, and they should be able to describe those to you. And it should resonate with you if you think that at the end of it, you think, oh, yeah, that makes sense for me. I understand that. That seems to fit with how I think about these things, etc. Our plan, we describe it to people, and some people, oh, yeah, that makes, we really get that. We really appreciate the level of detail. We see the benefits of it, on and on and on, and then they buy into it, possibly, or maybe they don't.
Right. So, to me, the next question is why, mm-hmm. and find out from them Why do they use that particular process? Goals or cash flow? And that should tie in to the third main question you're going to ask them. What is your philosophy on retirement planning and why? And that, Chris, to me, is crucial as you're interviewing someone. You need to know what he or she, what their process is. If they don't have a process, folks, that they can describe to you, see, what you're really looking for with that question is a blank stare or a lot of ums in the answer or a short 2-minute answer. Yeah. Because when I get into explaining our philosophy, you best warm up your cup of coffee. We're going to be here for about 15 minutes. And I get into how we created our process and why. And our process fully embraces cash flow planning. And you'll see that in our process. If you ask somebody, what type of software do you use, goals-based or cash flow-based? And they'll answer, then ask them why. See what they say. Can they articulate a good reason? But when you ask them, what is your philosophy? It better tie into the type of software they're using. If they're telling you, like we would tell you, we believe in cash flow based planning because our philosophy involves what we call the minimum dignity floor. I told you I was going to get to that. And we look at a person's expenses, and I'm going to get into our process in a minute. You can clearly see how they tie in. But if you have somebody who says, well, we use a goals-based plan because life changes really fast and it's easier for us to update it for you.
Or they'd say something like, oh, this is a well-established piece of software in the industry. We were, they kind of just give you this short little, I call it waving your hands at the, just kind of, very not a lot coming out of their mouth, but their hands are moving around a lot.
So let me be concerned. Let me give our listeners an example. If people are asking me when they come into the office, and no one really asks me these questions. Occasionally, I'll get questions like that, but they will ask me. People will ask, if we work with you for retirement planning, what can we expect? And that's kind of a good question. Mm-hmm. And to me, essentially, what they're asking is, what is your philosophy? So I often tell people, in order for me to share with you what my philosophy is and how we established our process, because we have a very disciplined process, you need to know how I got in front of you here today. And I share with them the story of the woman in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. You know that story. So for those who don't, let me just briefly, how much time do we have?
You have 4 minutes.
Okay. So I'll share that. Well, I'll share it now. What had happened is about 30 years ago, I was a police officer in Massachusetts, and I was going into a grocery store. I wasn't in uniform. I was off duty, and I was just wanted to go in and out. I go real fast. I went in there. I had my little hand cart filled, and I walked back to the register. And instantly, as I'm putting, there was only one person in front of me. And instantly, as I'm putting my groceries down, I knew something was wrong. I knew something was wrong because the woman in front of me never once looked at me. Even when I put the little ruler down and I started putting my groceries, I didn't get any acknowledgement, no quick glance. I just thought to myself, I don't think something's wrong here. And she kept staring, not at me or even acknowledging me. She kept staring at the computer screen as her goods were being scanned. Mm-hmm. When the very last item got picked up and scanned, again, the cop in me knew something was wrong because of her body language. Instantly, I couldn't help but notice her shoulders hunched, and she went and let out a sigh. And then she looked at the clerk and said, I can't afford those. Can you remove them? The clerk pressed a few keys, picked up the item, scanned it, and put it back down. I don't know why I did what I did next, but it changed my life forever. I picked that item up, I put it back on the other side of the ruler and told the clerk, I'll buy those. And I pulled out $2 from my wallet because it was $1.98 pint of strawberries. That's all it was. I didn't think anything of it, Chris. I'm just going to buy a woman a pint of strawberries. Instantly, I got the acknowledgement that I had never got before. The woman started thanking me and thanking me and thanking me incessantly, Chris. I mean, it went on for 15, 20 seconds, and I kept telling them, ma'am, it's okay, don't worry, enjoy. And finally, she breaks away and leaves, and I finish with my order. And I have a bag of groceries in each hand, and I'm walking outside, and as soon as I got through the doors, Chris, she's right there in the parking lot, and as soon as she saw me, she pushes her little carriage over to me, and she starts thanking me yet again. Now I'm getting just slightly annoyed. I had things to do. I wanted to get going. I was like, ma'am, it was my pleasure. Enjoy. It's okay. And I turned to walk away. And what she did next, folks, is the reason I'm here. She reached up and grabbed me by the shoulder and pulled down on me. She was shorter than me. And she pointed her finger up at me and she went, no, you don't understand. And I looked down at her, surprised. And I said to her, what don't I understand? This next quote, Chris, is nearly verbatim, and it's been over 30 years. She looked at me and she said, I am 78 years old, and I live on just Social Security. And my next check doesn't come for 10 days. Back then, checks were mailed. And she said, if you didn't buy me strawberries, I wouldn't have any. And I love strawberries. And with that, she turned and walked away. I was dumbfounded, Chris. I stood there in the parking lot just watching her, and I started thinking to myself, for the first time in my life, I was a 32-year-old cop. I never thought I was going to get old. For the first time in my life, I realized, that's going to be me someday. I'm going to get old, and I started thinking, this is it? This is what happens when you retire? You can't even afford strawberries? I didn't know anything about my pension. I didn't know anything about Social Security. I didn't know anything about finance. It just consumed me. I went back to my car and I drove to a bookstore. And I bought Money Magazine, Kiplinger's, all these magazines that day. And it ate me up. And 2 years later, I enrolled in Boston University, became a financial planner, and moved to Colorado. I shared with you that story eight, 9 years ago when I first hired you.
Yep.
And I said, none of our clients, if we do it right, will not be able to afford strawberries. And when we come back, we're going to explain to you what we mean by a cash flow-based plan and how Chris and I have developed this process.
Perfect. So thanks for sharing that. We will be back with you momentarily here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Wrapped around each other, trying so hard to stay warm. That first cold winter together.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is the not the number one song, but the one of the top 10 hits from this week back in 1982. The number one song was still "I Love Rock and Roll" by Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, but apparently, Tina doesn't like that song as much as she likes Rich Girl from Hall & Oates, so we don't get to replay that one. So we're playing an alternative from 1982 as we look back 35 years in our tribute to Social Security as we look back to 1935 when Social Security started, then to 1977, 40 years ago, in honor of the 40 elapsed years wording in the Social Security calculation. And we also look back 35 years in connection to 35 computational years, which ultimately determine your retirement benefit for Social Security. So that's our tie-in with all these songs. That is, in fact, that song that we just heard is Key Largo by Bertie Higgins. I'm not sure what number in the top 10 this song was in 1982, but certainly a recognizable song for most of us. You remember that song, don't you, Jim?
No.
And I knew I'd get you. No, microphone.
Darn.
There we go.
No, I don't remember it.
You don't remember that song?
No.
Oh, my goodness. I'll put it on a little thing so you can play it on the way home in your car. Anyway, back to you shared us with the would you like strawberries with your retirement story.
That's
what it's been it's entitled.
To me, when you are interviewing an advisor, he or she, they all shouldn't have a story like that, but they should have a process.
And a philosophy about
and a philosophy of how they are going to approach retirement planning. Remember, you don't want a generalized plan. If you're doing retirement planning, you want a specific retirement analysis. But then find out from the person you're working with, what is their philosophy? What is their process? And why? Well, ours is cash flow based, and it is based on that story, Chris. Clearly, that 78-year-old woman has, or she'd be 108 today, or more than 108, close to 110 today. This happened a long time ago, a few years over, 30 years ago. So she's probably passed away. But if she was alive, I would like to have found out, now that I'm a retirement planner and I know a lot. Back then when this happened, I never even thought I was going to get old. I didn't even know how Social Security worked. I didn't even know I wasn't going to get any because I wasn't paying into it. I wasn't even paying attention to that. So nowadays, as I work with people, I explain that story, because when Chris first came on board, I shared it to him. And I said, Chris, we need to come up with a process and an approach that can help people ensure, no matter how long they lived. Obviously, Chris, that woman outlived her assets. And that's right. The biggest fear retirees have is outliving their assets and becoming a war to the state or a burden to their children. You don't want to be in your 70s, 80s, and 90s hoping someone in the grocery store is going to buy a few things for you if you don't have enough money for them. So she did a few things wrong, I have to assume. I don't know. Or maybe she was dealt a few bad cards in life. And she had no more assets at age 78. So what we believe in our approach, I share with people, my philosophy. When someone asks me, what is your philosophy? Or more likely than not, Chris, they usually say to me, you know, what is your approach to retirement planning? What can I expect? I begin with that story. And I tell them, our approach is cash flow based. And it's designed not only to help you determine how much you're going to be spending on groceries, like this woman was doing, but what are you spending on other required expenses? Our approach, our process, helps you isolate required expenses from desired expenses. A required expense is an expense. If you don't cover, you will suffer an economic, financial, or medical hardship. Whereas a desired expense, if you don't cover it, you are going to suffer an emotional hardship. It is very easy, by definition, to cut a desired expense. I like to fish. Everybody here knows that. I want to go to Alaska more. And in retirement, I want to go to Alaska fishing. But if I don't go to Alaska fishing, Chris, I am going to suffer an emotional hardship. But in retirement, if I don't pay my property taxes to the county, I could lose my house. I can't go into the county come tax season and say, gee, Mr. or Mrs. Tax Collector, have you seen the market lately? It's down 20%. So I'm going to pay 80% of my property taxes. But as soon as the market recovers, I'll make up the other 20%. I can't do that. But I could cut my fishing trip, or cut my fishing trip by 20%, or cut my fishing trip by half, or not go at all. But I don't have that flexibility on what we call required expenses. Required expenses are more than just the typical housing and utilities and medical. We put personal care items in there. It has been proven that as we age, if we can continue to feel proud of ourselves, continue to take care of ourselves, go get the haircuts we need, go maintain our personal hygiene, then we have longer life expectancies. Studies have shown that. So we put that in our required expenses. We put the maintenance and upkeep and replacement of one vehicle, Chris. We are a mobile society. Now, in the future, we may 10, 15, 20 years from now, with ride-sharing services and everybody saying people aren't going to own cars, they're just going to be using them as needed, and cars are going to be self-driving themselves around, we'll probably build into our retirement analysis a transportation expense. Mm-hmm. But that is required. We pull all those together, and we call that your minimum dignity floor.
Mm-hmm. And I've added a few things just as an evolution. When it first started, we were pretty strict on the required expenses. But then we started to really mull it over and feedback from people and discover, you know, if things really fell apart and all they could cover were required expenses, because that's really why we break it out, is we want to make sure those required expenses are covered. No matter what happens to the market or other things that are out of your control, we want to make sure those are covered. When we really examined our original definition of required expenses, if that's all people could cover, it was pretty lean. It was pretty, I'd call it bare subsistence living. And that's where we turned up the knob a little bit, not to where required became an extravagant lifestyle, but rather this idea of what you term the minimum dignity floor, where it wouldn't be just I can survive if I just cover my requireds. It became, you know, if all I could pay for is requireds, I could be okay with that.
And that's the key, what you just said. And remember, folks, what we're saying again, this is something you need to hear from your advisor you're interviewing as they explain their philosophy and process. They should be able to walk you through why they believe what they believe. Chris and I believe in this, and we believe in it because that minimum dignity floor that we described to you, I personally and vehemently, I used that word twice today, I vehemently believe that minimum dignity floor needs to be covered by secure income. In a perfect retirement plan, someone will be able to do that. And what do we mean by that? To us, secure income has three parts to it. First, it's predetermined and known. There's no ambiguity. We can tell you at 70, 75, 80, 85, 90, and beyond how much you're going to get. Number two, secure income, if it moves at all, it will only move higher. In other words, it is not impacted by the whims of the stock market. It's not impacted by rising or dropping interest rates. It's not impacted by headline risk. It's not impacted by economic, monetary, or fiscal issues. Hell, nowadays, Chris, it's not impacted by presidential tweets. Secure income, if it moves at all, will only go higher, and usually from cost of living adjustments or other guarantees built into it. And number three, secure income, folks, are not backed by your assets. It's backed by a deep-pocketed third party. And we just described Social Security, pension, and income annuities. Those three items are secure income. Why do we believe in this? Because of the third element to our process. It would be, in my opinion, malpractice as a retirement planner not to talk openly with our clients, Chris, and acknowledge as humans, as we age, we are going to slow down financially, physically, and mentally. Of those three, only one, the financial you, can be impacted, can be manipulated. Sure, there are things you can do to slow down the aging process, but you can't stop it. And if we didn't acknowledge that as people age, And we talk about this all the time on the show. The various studies, Texas Tech University most recently, Harvard as the industry leading study on why older people fall victim to financial fraud and can't make basic financial decisions. We've talked about the part of our brain that understands financial concepts is the last to develop and the first to degrade. And it explains why people in their 20s and early 30s usually make poor financial decisions, teenagers and 20-year-olds. And then it reaches its pinnacle, its peak at age 53. And then it starts to degrade after age 53. And it starts to show that as people get into their 80s and 90s, Chris, they're not going to understand a lot of financial concepts. So our approach is the younger you putting in place a plan to take care of the older you. I may be talking to our 40, 50, and 60-year-old listeners, Chris, but honestly, folks, I am advocating for the 70, 80, and 90-year-old you. Don't leave them a complicated plan. Don't leave them one where, well, if the market is down by 10, we're going to cut these expenses and we're going to look at the correlation of the investments to the I can't even talk in that speak that those advisors talk in. They just make something that should be very easy, incredibly complex. And instead of just saying to people, look, once we isolate your minimum dignity floor, project that for inflation, build in unanticipated scenarios, and determine what you're going to need to maintain pride and dignity as you age in case you outlive your money, we're then going to put in place a plan to cover that with lifetime guaranteed income. We're going to teach you how to optimize your Social Security. We're going to evaluate your pension options. And if need be, we're going to help you navigate income annuities. But we're going to put an income plan in place now in your 60s and 70s to take care of you in your 80s and 90s with steady income, Chris, that comes in every single month. And the theory behind that, folks, is as you're aging and you either don't care about the markets anymore, you can't follow them, or you're just fed up with it, Chris. Retirement isn't supposed to be worried about what the stock market is doing or what the Federal Reserve is doing. Retirement is about enjoying the last third of our lives with those we love without having to worry. So to us, if you put in that income floor, that minimum dignity protection with secure income, as you age, you've really taken care of yourself. And I often say to people, we put in place a plan that ages well because you're not. And that's the thing to acknowledge. You can go through life kidding yourself, oh, I'm not going to grow old, or no, I'm not going to have a stroke, or no, I'm always going to remember what's going on. You're denying reality. We are going to slow down. So our philosophy is based on that woman from 32 years ago that I bought strawberries for because she couldn't afford any. We want to help you establish a minimum dignity floor. We want to then cover that with lifetime secure income. That's why we know what we know about Social Security, pension optimization, and income annuities. And we also want people to understand that as they age, this process is in place to age well. Then what's left, folks, once we have your minimum dignity floor in place, is your other assets. Mm-hmm. And that is to cover your desired expenses.
Which the goal, of course, always is to cover everything that you want to do. But it has to start with a foundation, in our opinion, that foundation being you've got the dignity floor in place. Once you know that's in place, hopefully you'll sleep better at night. You're not going to worry about worst case scenarios. You've essentially eliminated worst case scenarios. You've got a basic foundation. Then on top of that, then you have fun your go to do the, I'd like to do this. I'd like to donate to this. I'd like to take this other vacation over here, which is all great if you have the assets to do so.
And here's what makes our approach unique. Once we have the minimum dignity floor in place, we've done the projections with a cash flow based plan. We have an idea of the amount of income they need at various points in retirement. We cover it with secure income. Whatever assets are left, I tell people, you spend that as fast as you want. And that comes as a shock to my colleagues.
Right. And I think the reason is there's so many people who think, gee, what you're describing, if you go with our plan, is that people aren't going to be able to spend as much to have fun on.
Oh, no.
That's actually the opposite.
The opposite.
The opposite is true because think about it. If you don't know, you don't have your floor in place, you may not even know where your floor is. People tend to clench up and freeze up.
And they don't want to spend.
And they don't want to spend anything. Oh, no, I can't go on vacation because I need to, I'm not sure I can survive through retirement to cover the things I really need. Well, once you have that burden taken from you, you've essentially got a plan to take care of those, then all the decisions at the margin that you're making, all those other decisions are just the, do I want to take a little vacation a couple of times this year? Or should I just take one big vacation? I'll save up for a couple of years and take one big vacation. Or am I going to visit the grandkids this many times or take them to Disney World? Or, you know, all those kinds of decisions. So we've got all of that, I think, you put in a more comfortable setting.
Exactly. So our approach isn't to limit on the desired expenses, the fun things in life. We want you to do the fun things. We don't limit, Chris. Oh, you can only take out 3% of your portfolio a year or 4%. 4% used to be the standard. Now it's 3%. To me, that's silly. We acknowledge you're going to go through the go-go years, the slow-go years, and the no-go years of retirement. During the go-go years, I tell people you can spend this money down as fast as you want. We're going to update and monitor your plan every year. We may have to move some of your fund money to the minimum dignity floor pool, but unless, and that's because we're going to monitor changes in your life. But I don't care how fast you spend that down. I really don't. That's your desires. Go do them while you can. And that is a unique approach. And some people like that. Other people don't. And they still don't spend it down. But people sometimes say, wow, we never looked at it that way. Once we have taken care of the older us with this minimum dignity floor, the younger you can spend the money. The problem is when the younger you spends it all, the older you don't have the floor in place, and you're that 78-year-old woman who can't afford strawberries. So it brings me back around to get you, to get our listeners, especially those emailers, to understand one more element. When you talk to your advisor, when you're interviewing them, ask them this, Chris. Is your retirement planning income-centric or investment-centric? That is key. We are income-centric. We believe in helping establish certainty and guarantees so it can take care of your minimum dignity floor and, of course, lifetime secure income, Social Security, pension, and annuity. They continue, Chris, for the rest of your life. And joint and survivor if you're married and chose those options. In investment-centric approach, those are mostly investment advisors. Again, we've talked about there's a difference between financial planning and investment advisors. Investment advisors favor an investment-centric approach to managing your spending. They don't generally believe in income annuities. They don't believe all the time in maximizing Social Security. Or they tend to favor lump sum payouts on a pension, not the actual pension payments. We tend to favor the pension payments. We look at retirement planning through income-centric approach, not an investment-centric approach. Because in an investment-centric approach, folks, they believe or they base it on variability and probability. They'll give you a probability statistic. You've spoken about this in the past, Chris, using Monte Carlo scenarios. They'll say you have an 80, 85, 90% chance of achieving your goals. So they look at a goals-based plan with a probability projection. We don't favor that for retirement because you only have one chance to get this right. So to us, the required expenses, Chris, that minimum dignity floor, don't take chances with that.
No, we want that covered 100%.
You should be going with certainty and guarantees. But at the same token, watch out for the advisors who believe all your expenses should be covered with certainty and guarantees. They don't have to. There are other expenses, the desires, my fishing trip to Alaska. I can put that in the market, Chris, and I can manage a portfolio. And if the market is down, maybe I don't go to Alaska. I go for 3 days instead of five.
Maybe have that invested in mutual funds.
I can cut. You had to say mutual fund. I can cut that expense. But it's important for you to ask again, to recap, because the music's going to start in a minute. Ask your advisor, are you cash flow based or goals based on the retirement plan? Ask them on the financial plan themselves. Let me even back up a little more. Are you comprehensive planner, which remember is going to be general, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. If you want a specific retirement plan, you want a modular planner. And someone who's going to drill down into just retirement planning. Then you're going to ask them, are you cash flow based or goals based? See which one fits you best. Then ask for their philosophy. Find out how they got before you today. I have a very compelling story on why I believe in what I believe. Find out what their process is. It's the two P's, their process and their philosophy. And does it match what you believe in? And then finally ask them, are you income-centric or investment-centric in how you're going to work with me? Will you help me put an income plan in place, or do you believe in investments and withdrawals? And again, remember, an income plan is based on certainty and guarantees, whereas an investment plan is based on variability of returns and probability statistics. Put all that together, Chris, and find out which one matches you best. Yes, we're a little biased. We like ours the best. The only reason I shared mine in such depth today is to give these listeners and all listeners an idea of things to look for when evaluating not only the retirement planner, but the retirement plan itself.
Perfect. So that music, you're right. It was right around the corner. We're here. That means it's the end of this episode of the Retirement and IRA Show. We do welcome your emails. We got a couple here. We answered them kind of in general about the retirement planning process. Hopefully we've helped out a little bit in that regard. Please send us your emails at jimhelps.com. You can find our contact information, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.